This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Hey, it's Gemma Spegg, host of the Open Mind Original podcast, Mantra. Every Monday, I'll bring you a new mantra, a simple yet powerful phrase to help you clear your mind and stay grounded amidst the chaos. I'll also share some personal stories, journal prompts, and a weekly challenge to bring each mantra to life. Follow and listen to Mantra, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Open Mind Studios, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to The Mark Reardon Show on 97.1 FM Talk.
Ethan's been doing a great job, and Matthew as well, but we got at least two members of the team back tomorrow, and I'm looking forward to it. Fred has been in Japan for like a week and a half, and we think he's back. We're not completely sure. He could be very sleep-deprived at this time. Sue needed to take off a few days here for some personal business this week, and she will be back with us tomorrow as well. And then, unfortunately, Ethan Hannaford, who covers the Cardinals, we have a lot of people here in the building that cover multiple roles, and Ethan certainly is one of them, so he's going to go over to Busch Stadium tomorrow. He gets a press credential to cover the team and does some stuff in the locker rooms afterwards. Everyone will be here on Friday, Queen of All Saints. It is the, and I can't believe it's the fourth stop right now in the Fish Fry Tour, Queen of All Saints in South County on Christopher Drive. We will head to St. Mary Magdalene next week. That one is in Brentwood, and that's a new one. We have not been there previously. Ott's Tavern in Millstadt, Illinois, to wrap everything up on the 11th of April. So the Fish Fry Tour continues, and it should be fun. We had a great time last week at Assumption Parish. What a turnout. We met a lot of listeners. We even had a little bit of a panel assembled to watch the Reardon Roundtable, so that was fun. My friend Dwayne Patterson, who writes at hotair.com, he's the host of the Dwayne's World podcast, will weigh in on some politics here at the end of the hour. I still have an audio cut of the day to get to, and if you want to use the Rewind app, we had a great conversation with Ricky Horton a couple hours ago, a preview of the Cardinals season, which obviously kicks off tomorrow. That was around 3:45, and you can rewind to that on the Odyssey app. We had a great, great time, and many of you were there on Saturday night at the Factory in Chesterfield for Brian Kilmeade's appearance. It was a great success, and our thanks to Brian and his whole team for including 97.1 FM Talk. He is with us this afternoon for his weekly visit. How are you? That seemed like a pretty damn good time on Saturday night.
Yeah, I know. I guess you guys went to the heavy metal concert the next night.
Well, you heard about that, huh?
Yeah, I heard all hell broke loose, right?
It seemed to have. Yeah, that was actually on Monday night, but interesting. We always have something that's going on. But look, I didn't undersell the venue, did I? That place is fantastic.
Oh, it was great. I mean, I don't think I'm ever going to play in a nicer place ever. So it was just brand new, first-class operations. You guys were great. Audience was great. All, you know, everything was just perfect. I mean, behind the scenes was first class, too. I can't imagine Morgan Wallen getting a better treatment than we got.
Boy, they did a great job with all the backstage stuff. And I also heard that you were there, I think, until 11:30, signing books in the lobby as well, Brian Kilmeade.
Yes, yeah, meeting everybody until everyone was gone. It was, since it's not a school night, I was allowed to stay up late.
Yeah, so. But you're insane. You had, like, everyone was saying, you had, like, a 3:30 flyer. You had to leave at 3:30, right, to get to the airport. So you got no sleep, which is typical.
Yeah, you didn't tell me about the pouring rain. I mean, that was some badass rain. It was, and the wind was actually blowing the expedition en route to the airport. That was interesting. So if I wasn't awake at 3:30,
you were gonna be.
The weather got me awake.
Yeah, that's interesting. Well, listen, it was great, and we've had you here now almost like 3 years in a row, and it's been a lot of fun, and it was great success. I really enjoyed, and I think I told you this the other night, I went up to watch the show for a little while at the beginning before we had some participation, and I loved the whole bit with you in the beginning and sort of your origin story, playing soccer, getting rejected a lot, maybe in athletics, taking your determination and your perseverance onto the next level, trying to get jobs. You showed some interesting images of all the rejection letters that you've gotten and saved over the years. That was a great bit. I really enjoyed that. It was very inspirational.
Oh, thanks. I mean, it's all true, just so you know.
I get it. Well, we hope to get you back again soon, Brian, but let's talk about some things going on. Look, I've been trying to stay on top of this whole Signal controversy. I don't know where you are on this. The one thing that really kind of is not explained well and that I'm confused about is how, you know, Jeffrey Goldberg got on that particular string. I get that if I have a Brian in my contacts, I have Brian Kilmeade and I have Brian Johnson, and I start to type out a text to Brian Kilmeade and all of a sudden the other contact comes up. We all have done that on our cell phones, but it doesn't seem like Goldberg's name was on the list of contacts for Michael Wall. So that's where it gets a little confusing. Any theories there?
I don't. I mean, I have a lot of pedestrian theories. Practical consumer theories for people with the experience of going to buy a phone at the Apple Store or with Verizon. But I will say this. I talked to Michael Waltz last night after he got off with Laura Ingraham. And essentially, they still don't know. They still don't know. So Elon Musk, he goes, I handed my phone to him. And he's going through it. And they put his great tech guys on there. And no one's covering. Maybe it was a staffer that hooked it up and got the wrong JG. Nobody knows. For example, is there a way to put Mark Reardon? Okay, I'm going to call Mark Reardon now. Okay. Is there a way I call Mark Reardon, the contact says Mark Reardon, and the phone number somebody else?
Yeah, I don't know.
That's the question. So I can't do that, but has that ever happened? Is there a way to do that, infiltrate maybe the State Department, the National Security? Is there a way to do that? I don't know. But all I can tell you is I don't think this is a staffer screwing up. I think there's something else going on here. Having said all that, okay, big deal? Absolutely. And what about the fortuitous timing of having the briefing of the Senate and House Intelligence Committee on the dangers that the country is facing? So if you look at the opening statements, they talk about in detail China, the challenge, Russia, the challenge, what's going on in the Middle East. And okay, here we go. This is the Trump way of attacking. This is our offensive foreign policy for the next 4 years. Oh yeah, we're not listening to that. Now about Signal. And do you realize how you screwed up? Realize how much you screwed up? And I'm saying to myself, okay, you're wrong. I said Mike Waltz goes, yeah, it's me. I set it up. No problem. It could be a staffer, but I'm in charge. Got it. Trump, take questions? Absolutely. He took an hour today, hour yesterday. Got it. Oh, Mike Waltz, right over there. Ask me any question you want. Got it. All right, here's the second half now. Now you have everything down. Get it out of your system. But we've been through this drill before. Mistake. Got it. Now, are you going to pound this all weekend, all night, 24 hours a day? Because we're not going to tolerate it as a country. We've already been through this. And I would say that the Republicans are doing it, Democrats. There's so many other stories out there. There's so much that Trump is doing. There's so many challenges we have. I mean, we don't know what's going on with these peace talks in Russia. I would argue that bigger than Signal. You know, I wanted to do a follow-up on the Houthis. That was a devastating attack, but nobody cared about it.
Yeah.
I mean, even at work, I'm bringing it up, and everyone's like, yeah, Brian, no one cares about it.
Right.
I'm like, yeah, nobody cares. Now, all of a sudden, you care. And by the way, can we ask how effective it was? Yeah, I'd like to know. Can we open up the waterways? Yeah. And by the way, it was much more than bombing the Houthis, you know, men in moccasins with the sophisticated weapons. But it's a message to Iran, and it's a message to Israel. Israel's getting rocketed from the Houthis. We hit them. Iran's got a letter 2 months to decide if they're going to dismantle their nuclear program. We're going to blow it up. And how serious are we? The proxies that you've been propping up, we hit them hard. We killed 53 people, unlike Joe Biden, who's just blown up empty launchers. So this is all a method, and there's a mission there. And I just wish somebody was curious, more curious, until it all leaked out. I think there's a lot of desperation for Democrats to get traction on something, to not talk about Chuck Schumer and the continuing resolution, the big beautiful bill they're going to be get jammed down their throats if Republicans act in unison. So we can't get Crockett to stop mocking people in wheelchairs. So how do we do that? Well, we talk about the Signal.
It's a great distraction, and I understand that. But my standard is usually, I said this earlier, would I be very concerned if this was happening on the other side? And I say that I would be. But, you know, now they're calling for Hex's head already. They're calling for resignations. That, to me, that makes no sense. I get that this is a serious issue. And by the way, I give Laura credit. I left last night. I heard that interview with Michael Waltz. There were no softball questions in that interview.
It doesn't do anybody any good to give softball questions. Because it doesn't help the subject, and it doesn't help the interviewer. Michael, tell me what happened. Great. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back in a moment. It doesn't help anybody. So, you know, Michael even told me, he's like, wow, that was tough questions, but he doesn't mind. But the thing is, he doesn't have answers for it. Think about the frustration. You know, I'll give you an example in my life. I have a travel agent that Angelie introduced me to, and we're on a thread, me and my wife, and we're trying to figure out where we're going to go this summer when everyone graduates. And then something else happened, and I texted my wife about something unrelated, but guess what I did? I texted on the chain with the travel
right,
agent.
Right.
And
yeah.
My wife goes to me, you got to be kidding me. Do you realize what you just sent over? And I had to call her. I apologize. Nothing to do with you. It wasn't that secret. But don't I do that every day? Don't you do that sometimes?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, absolutely.
You know, at least I know what I did wrong. He still can't figure it out.
Yeah.
So I'm like, really? He goes, I still don't know.
That's
because
what's
nobody
weird.
Has his number.
So then you got to wonder about a hack or something. Isn't that, I'm not a conspiracy person, but doesn't that have to be in play?
Well, you got a pretty, these guys get along. You read the text messages.
Yep.
These guys get along. And they've been through the wars together in the campaign and their own campaigns. So they disagree, but they get along. So they're airtight. They're not leaking to Jeff Goldberg. They don't need to call. Steve Bannon was calling, I forgot the name of the magazine. It was ridiculous. He's in the White House in the first term, calling a magazine. And when he left the White House, he went to another liberal magazine and opened up about Donald Trump really not being that good a president. I'm thinking to myself, oh my God, what the hell? That's a guy on your team. That's not the story now. So I think if you say it's a hack, it's a cop out. But I think this. Do not be surprised if the former Green Beret intelligence officer who worked for Dick Cheney and was trained in a very sophisticated department as an advisor to Dick Cheney, don't be surprised if he didn't do anything wrong. If we're talking in a couple of weeks and it comes out that he didn't do anything wrong, but he's typical him. He's like, it's my fault. I'll do it. And, you know, Trump brought up today, it was his staffer, it was his guy. And he goes, no, he goes, no, it's me. But he doesn't know how. He doesn't know how it's him, but ultimately it's your responsibility.
Let's say you mentioned Jasmine Crockett. Let's talk about her.
Because we in these hot ass Texas streets, honey. Y'all know we got Governor Hot Wheels down there. Come on now. And the only thing hot about him is that he is a hot ass mess, honey.
So, Brian, I'm the outlier on this, apparently, but I want to get your opinion. I think it's utterly, and she's an idiot. Okay. And by the way, she grew up here, you know. Very, very privileged high school in you know.
Really?
Oh, yeah. She went to a fancy country day high school and another school here. Right. So it's all an act. Like, and I get that. But I think it's ridiculous for Republicans to act like Democrats and call for a censure for something like this. There's an opportunity in moments like this. I even had someone that hit me on Twitter. You put something out there. You know, Greg Abbott is a pretty sharp guy. You go out there and you put some Hot Wheels and put an image out there with him spinning around in that wheelchair, destroying opponents, political opponents. That's how you flip the script. I just don't like it. It sounds like they're whining about it. That's my problem.
Mark, I go with you. I mean, my instinct was same thing as Al Green. You call up and just say you really shouldn't make fun of disabled people. But then it brings up the whole thing about what Trump did in 2015 with the New York Times reporter, which I have not met that New York Times reporter, but evidently he's got something similar that he might have been imitating. I don't know. It seems like 100 years ago. But I know what you mean. Be above it. But it is pretty amazing for a Democrat to mock a governor in a wheelchair. I mean, it is pretty amazing. But he is one of the most successful governors in the country. Democrat or Republican, most success. I mean, look at what this guy has done.
Yeah, really.
I mean,
really
he's been amazing.
Absolutely. All right, it's only Wednesday. I think it's only Wednesday. I'm losing track of the days, Brian. But you got the show on Sunday night set. You're still putting it together.
Well, I'm definitely going to have Kaylee McEnany. I definitely want her communications ability. I'm definitely going to have, that's my Great Pyrenees, who will not be on the show.
That's okay.
I will, and then we're going to have, we're working on a few things. I just got to think. Let me see. What do I know for sure we're going to have?
It is only Wednesday.
Yeah, it is only Wednesday. So, yeah, we're still formulating because I'm not sure that signal's still going to be hot by Sunday. So we're going to think about it. Just know everyone should watch at 9 o'clock on Sunday.
We will check it out. 9 o'clock here in the Midwest. Brian Kilmeade, what a great time we had over the weekend. We'll get you back here soon. Thank you so much. Have a great weekend.
Thanks for everything, and thanks everybody in St. Louis.
All right, take care. Thank you. Thank you, Brian Kilmeade. He's got the dog going crazy there. I understand that. That happens at my house as well. We have Dwayne coming up here in just a couple of minutes, Dwayne Patterson from hotair.com. But I wanted to get in, and I have options here for audio cut of the day relating to NPR. And I want to get back to that. I started the show with that. But one of our favorites, and you hear him in the show open here on a regular basis, is Republican Louisiana Senator John Kennedy, who is he's just a wordsmith. And he's really, really good when it comes to some of the testifying that goes on Capitol Hill. So there was a hearing before the Senate Judiciary Subcommittee on the Constitution regarding the censorship industrial complex. And he was talking with this radical activist by the name of Marianne Franks, who has written a book called The Cult of the Constitution. So one of the things that she's apparently really good at, self-proclaimed, is her area of expertise is teaching the First Amendment and the Second Amendment, those areas of the law. So, you know, he kind of piggybacks on a little bit of that when he's doing the questioning the other day.
And did you also say in that article, I'm going to quote again, quote, by simultaneously expanding white men's right to kill and constricting women's right not to die, this Supreme Court, referring to the current United States Supreme Court, has turned the Constitution into a homicide pact as well, close quote. Did you write that?
That sounds like me.
Okay.
Yeah, and she's very proud of it. Yeah, that sounds like me. No denials there.
For 2024. You tweet, don't you?
I'm not sure what the current terminology is for it, but yes, I am sometimes on the social platform that was formerly known as Twitter.
Yeah, you're on a lot, aren't you?
I'm not sure what the relevance of that is.
You're trying to be provocative on there, don't you?
Again, I'm not sure what the relevance of this question is.
Well, let me show you the relevance. On November 7th, 2024, from your tweet, here's one of your tweets at 2:41 p.m., quote, the majority of Americans hate women. The majority of Americans hate women more than they love anything, including democracy, close quote. Did I read that correctly?
I am not sure what this has to do with the subject matter of this.
Did you say it?
I do not have those words in front of me. I probably said something along those lines, but yeah, what is the relevance
here
of that
it
to
is,
this
biggest
hearing?
Dallas, right?
So she doesn't want to deny that she says, because she said it, and she knows she said it, and she put it out there. By the way, that was right after the election. But again, she's a constitutional law professor that's weighing in on all that, and he kind of, you know, gets her into a corner here.
Your political beliefs don't impact your feelings about President Biden or President Trump.
I don't have feelings about either of them. What I have
sounds
is
to me like you have your favorite feeling is anger.
Yes.
Let me ask you this. You issued another tweet. This was in May of 2022. You've just been tweeting up a storm. You said, quote, there's a reason why the conservative-dominated Supreme Court thinks the Constitution does not contain a right to an abortion, but is convinced that it contains an individual right to possess firearms. And that reason is white male supremacy, close quote.
It would have nothing to do with that being explicitly written out in the United States Constitution, of course.
Did I read that correctly?
Is there a question in this?
Did I read that correctly? That's
is there
my
a question.
Question
that is relevant to this hearing?
Did I read that correctly? Do you really think that the United States Supreme Court, you're an officer of the court, is guided by white male supremacy?
I believe
she does.
That the First Amendment prohibits the president
and other state officials
for punishing people for
this. Did you honestly say that, Professor?
I
and you expect us,
that the First Amendment,
as a Democratic witness, to take you seriously? Are you kidding me?
Yeah, he always does such a great job, and he kind of closed it out by saying, curb my nausea. The other thing that I'll tell you, and I'm going to have some great audio from this hearing to defund NPR, is if there was no X, formerly Twitter, and tweets out there, you'd have about 1/8 of the testimony, because most of it these days are citing tweets from the past. And I'll have more examples of that coming up. Dwayne Patterson from hotair.com, host of the Dwayne's World podcast. He is awesome on politics. He's coming up next. Yeah, come see us on Friday. It's going to be a great time. We had an awesome crowd at Assumption last week. We're going to stay in South County, Queen of All Saints. So we just had Brian on talking about the situation with the errant chat that, you know, Goldberg over at The Atlantic was included on. Now, here's what I heard when I left last night. Michael Walls was talking about this on Laura's show.
I built the group to my job is to make sure everything's coordinated.
But how did the execute number, I don't mean to be pedantic here, but how did the number
have
get
you ever had
a chat?
Have you ever had somebody's contact that shows their name and then you have somebody else's number there?
Oh, I never make those mistakes.
Right? You've got somebody else's number on someone else's contact. So, of course, I didn't see this loser in the group. It looked like someone else. Now, whether he did it deliberately or it happened in some other technical mean is something we're trying to figure out.
Two observations on that. Once I had to look up the one, rather, I had to look up the word pedantic, thanks to Laura. That is of like a pendant. Many of the essays are long, dense, and too pedantic to hold great appeal. So thank you for Laura Ingraham for making me look that up. And then Jesse Waters said this about the whole thing.
Journalists like Goldbergel sometimes send out fake names with a contact with their cells to deceive politicians. Wall says Elon and Big Balls are on the case. This wouldn't surprise me if Goldberg sneaked his way in. He's the lowest of the low.
Well, I don't think I disagree with Jesse on that, but I'm very curious to hear what Dwayne Patterson has to say with HotAir.com. He hosts the Dwayne's World podcast. There is no doubt in my mind that he did not have to look up the word pedantic. How are you this afternoon, Dwayne Patterson?
I'm doing pretty good. Now, there are some words I look up, but, you know, when you work for a lawyer like Hugh Hewitt, you tend to pick up some of the big Yahtzee words, the Scrabble words that you don't normally hear in your day-to-day vocabulary.
I always had to do this back in the day with William F. Buckley, and I think that was part of his goal, to make people look up words that they didn't understand. He was brilliant. Yep. He was really good at it. But listen, I am very, very curious to hear your take on this whole Intel controversy, because obviously this has blown up here in the last couple of days. They don't seem to be afraid of asking or answering the questions in the administration. But I still can't figure out, Dwayne, and I just talked to Mr. Kilmeade about this, how the hell Goldberg gets looped into this string. It does not make sense.
Well, what Walsh was trying to say, and I don't know what the answer is, but I've got probably, 500, 600 contacts in my phone, right? And one of those is a dual citizen Israeli who was a beat cop in Seattle for a while, but he was also in special forces for the IDF when he lived in Israel.
Okay.
And when he lived in Seattle, his phone number happened to be the same number. It came up on my phone as Mike Kerb, the old gospel family singer. Now, that was an error somewhere along the way. Whenever Mike Kerb was calling my phone, it was not Mike Kerb.
That's weird.
It was just a typo somewhere along the way. I got a digit off. That stuff can happen. Now, it's ultimately, for the National Security Advisor, you've got to have either people check that stuff or you check it yourself before you start having that kind of conversation. Now, that said, honest to goodness, it's not hard to see what D.C. is trying to do with this story. The D.C. Establishment could care less about national security.
Oh, of course
not. If they cared about national security, the Afghanistan withdrawal would have been handled completely different. There might have been a different reaction to Mark Milley, the former Joint Chiefs of Staff, when he said, well, if there's a battle plan against China, I'm going to leak the plans to China. The left didn't say boo about that. So I'm not going to just sit here and play whataboutism. It was a screw-up by somebody. But let's talk about the National Security Advisor for a second, Mike Waltz. Now, is that a confirmed position by the United States Senate? No, it is he serves literally at the pleasure of the president. And the last time I heard from Donald Trump, which was today, he likes the team around him. So there's no story here. He's not going anywhere.
Well, they're already calling for, Warner's doing this. This is all they have, okay? This is, to your point, there's nothing else that they can, they've tried. They've tried to put things in a different direction. Nothing is sticking. The ratings for Trump are going up. The Democrat approval ratings are going down. So they see this. And in fairness, if this happened on the other side, I think a lot of people would jump in as well. But the difference is that there's no piling on that would occur if it was going in the other direction. Maybe a few questions would be asked. I even told Brian, look, that interview that Laura Ingraham did last night with Walls, it was no softball interview. She was asking good questions
Absolutely.
That were on point, tough questions, and those questions should be answered. But I think what you're saying is the CNNs, the New York Times, they're jumping on this like this is the crisis of the century already.
Just because it involves Trump and they
exactly.
see it as a window of opportunity.
Exactly.
Now, do you want me to take it to a level that you probably haven't even heard yet because you've been on the air?
I do want you to take it there.
D.C. is about ready to take nuts and turn it up to Spinal Tap's 11 here in the next couple of days. Have you heard about Diego Garcia and what's going on there
No.
over the last... We have sent about 3 hours west of you on I-70, or just off of I-70. Isn't there an Air Force base there?
Yeah.
Whiteman?
Whiteman Air Force Base, yep, on the other side of the state.
What normally hangs out there?
The B-2.
Well, not anymore, because about five of them are now sitting on Diego Garcia on the end of a very long runway, along with 17 long-range supertankers to refuel them. Now, there's only two reasons why all that air power has been restationed to Diego Garcia, which, for your listeners' benefit, it's in the Indian Ocean, just south off the coast of Iran.
Right.
There's only two reasons that would happen. Number one, Donald Trump has been signaling to, sorry, didn't mean to use the word signal, has been messaging, sorry, has been messaging to Iran that, you know, I'm not kidding around here. Yeah, you're going to figure out what hell looks like if you don't change course here. And they haven't changed course. And so there's been a huge buildup in Diego Garcia over the last 48 hours. In the next day or two, it would not surprise me a bit if there was a raid that was conducted on Iran. There's only two reasons you put those B-2s and refueling whatever they are, 117s, I think, or maybe 135s. But the reason you put there is, one, to either finally take out the problem in Iran once and for all, or two, you're making Iran think that we're going to do that. One of the two. But if all that happens, what you're going to see, and again, this is something Trump has been signaling has been coming for the last, what, month or so, roughly? He's been saying to the mullahs, we're not going to put up with this very much longer. And so this is not a surprise that he's making this move. What D.C. is going to do with this, if we do a move on Iran, is you're going to hear D.C. descend into, well, this is wag the dog. This is a created thing just to knock the scandal off the headlines. You're going to see D.C. go bonkers.
I think you're right about that. Right. Yeah, that's interesting. I see a little coverage of it out there if I Google it, but that is something to keep an eye on here in the next couple of days. So, Dwayne, you probably have heard me talk about this before. I do this feature at the end of the show called Audio Cut of the Day, where I grab either the one soundbite that kind of jumps out from the day or maybe a collection of sound. And I have settled today on the NPR defunding hearing that took place on Capitol Hill earlier today. Did you pay any attention to that at all?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, it was glorious.
Catherine Mayer, you got to hang her testimony in the Marconi Museum. It's just grand.
She was just awful, and they hit her really, really hard. I mean, if they don't come out of this thing and actually pull the plug on this nonsense funding of PBS and NPR, then I'm going to be extremely disappointed. But that did not go well for those folks today.
We actually played her prepared remarks, all 5 minutes of them, on our nationally syndicated show today, just to air her best case that she made, and it was awful. And then you hear Brandon Gill bring the receipts about all the things she has said and done over the years.
Oh, yeah. I'll play here in a few minutes. I have a couple of the exchanges, and it was glorious. But I mean, look, you know, from a media fairness perspective, I don't even understand how this is even on the table, how this wasn't pulled a long time ago. I mean, I think we know why, but it's ridiculous. And they always talk about how small, you know, it's only 1%. I think I heard 5% today. Well, then you're not going to miss it, right? You won't miss it.
Right. You can't have it both ways, right? It's either vital and essential or it's not. You can't have it both ways. But why hasn't it been pulled? The reason it hasn't been pulled is because unless you tuck it into reconciliation, you are not going to get 7 votes in the United States Senate among Democrats to go along with it. The only way that funding gets cut is if it's part of the reconciliation package. Now, if it doesn't get jammed into this one of all years, when we're finally in the mood to cut things, if it doesn't go this time, I don't know if it's ever going to go.
I'm with you on that. All right, one more topic, because I do want to get to that audio. And I texted you about this morning, and I checked in with a couple of people. Brian Kilmeade agreed with me. Look, I think Jasmine Crackett is an idiot, okay? She's on full display. I do think that we're giving her too much attention, which she craves. But this whole thing with the Greg Abbott line, I just think Republicans are acting like Democrats, calling for a censure in all this nonsense right now.
Absolutely. I agree with you. There is bigger fish to fry, even in addition to what you're going to be doing on Friday. But that said, you're going to have that kind of gamesmanship from both sides. That's just part of the debacle of D.C. politics. I don't like it any more than you do. It's kind of silly. It's kind of stupid. It's kind of pointless. But the bottom line is, us in the broadcast business, us in the communications business, how much good was Nancy Pelosi for our business in getting Republicans elected, making Nancy Pelosi the focal point, the poster child of the Democratic
right.
Party?
But I got a better one for you, and here's what I referenced earlier, because Cori Bush was that for St. Louis and for the country.
She's gone, right?
But she was the gift that kept on giving, right? She helped Republicans, I think, if we're really being honest.
Yeah, absolutely. Nancy Pelosi has been mostly sidelined now. She'll still say something crazy every once in a while, but she's 140 years old. She's a lot less relevant than she used to be. If AOC and Jasmine Crockett are going to be the faces of the Democratic Party, sign me up for whatever I can do to help make that happen.
No, I'm with you on that. And by the way, I think you know this, but we mentioned she went to two fancy schools here, MICDS and Rosati Kane. So
speak the Queen's English.
Yeah. She's such a fraud. But again, I get uncomfortable with it because I feel like she knows that she's getting this attention. Who knew her name even a couple of months ago? You got to give her a little credit because now people know who the hell she is.
Yes, that's exactly the case. But what happens a lot of times when people throw themselves and try to make a big name for themselves? The fall usually comes right after the pride, right? I mean, Eric Swalwell was front and center for a long time, California congressman. And he kind of fell off the...
It happened to Corey, too. And by the way, you know, her husband just got indicted last week here.
Oh, yeah.
As well. Listen, I got to run because I got to get to this audio. Dwayne, have a great week. I appreciate it.
You got it.
All right. Another reminder, we think Sue Thomas will be back tomorrow, and Fred as well from his trip to Japan, so we'll have to get caught up with him. Ethan's going to be over at Busch Stadium for opening day, and then we're all going to be together at the Fish Fry at Queen of All Saints on Christopher Drive, starting at 3 o'clock with a live roundtable on Friday. But let's do this here.
Stand by. Playback ready.
Now, the audio cut of the day.
Oh, this is just glorious. As someone in a business that is really tough right now, you know, it's very, very competitive. Digital advertising has really put the hurt on traditional broadcast media and I'd say print media as well. But you know who's got a distinct advantage in all this? National Public Radio and PBS, because they're subsidized by our tax dollars. Hopefully not too much longer, because what was on display today on Capitol Hill was quite something. Catherine Marr, who runs NPR, was put in some very uncomfortable positions.
Let me ask you, why did you call President Trump a fascist and a deranged racist sociopath in 2020?
Congressman, I appreciate the opportunity to address this. I regret those tweets. I would not tweet them again today. They represented a time where I was reflecting on something that I believe that the president had said rather than who he is. I don't presume that anyone is a racist.
You don't believe anyone is a racist?
I don't start by presuming anyone is a racist, sir.
Okay,
well, your audience does. Let me tell you that. Your audience does, and by the way, you do as well. And also, by the way, Catherine Marr, the only reason you give one rip right now is because they're going to tear away millions of dollars of funding. So that's why you're cowering right now.
NPR, PBS ever conducted an internal review to assess whether conservative or right-leaning perspectives are fairly representative news and programming?
Congressman, what we look at is the distribution of people who listen to our work, and we can tell you, and I'm proud to tell you, that for our digital, our podcasts and our website, the distribution of Americans who come to NPR does reflect the political distribution of the nation. In fact, the distribution on our websites, 33% of folks who come are conservative versus 28% who are liberal, and the rest identify as independent. So the largest group is conservatives who come to NPR's websites.
So you believe that most Americans think President Trump is a fascist and a deranged racist sociopath?
I don't believe that at all, sir.
But let's go back to the fact that she claims that conservatives are their biggest audience, because that... Thank you, Kenny Wallace.
Isn't that great?
I mean, give me a break. Good luck with that. And, you know, let's just, for argument's sake here, let's say that they are. But we're all okay with ripping the federal funding away as your conservative audience. We support that. Here's Brandon Gill from Texas giving it to her.
Do you believe that America is addicted to white supremacy?
I believe that I tweeted that, and I, as I've said earlier, I believe much of my thinking has evolved over the last half decade.
Again, it hasn't evolved over the last half decade. It's evolved over the last 4 months, because now they realize this S is real. It's real.
It has evolved. Why did you tweet that?
I don't recall the exact context, sir, so I wouldn't be able to say.
Okay. Do you believe that America believes in black plunder and white democracy?
I don't believe that, sir.
You tweeted that in reference to a book you were reading at the time, apparently, yeah. The Case for Reparations.
So she's just caught at every turn here.
Apologies, I don't recall that I did.
Okay.
No doubt that your tweet there is correct, but I don't recall that.
Okay. Do you believe that white people inherently feel superior to other races?
I do not.
You don't? You tweeted something to that effect. You said, I grew up feeling superior. Ha, how white of me. Why did you tweet that?
I think I was probably reflecting on what it was to grow up in an environment where I had lots of advantages.
It sounds like you're saying that white people feel superior.
I don't believe that anybody feels that way, sir. I was just reflecting on my own experiences.
Do you think that white people should pay reparations?
I have never said that, sir.
Yes, you did.
Yeah, you did.
Said it in January of 2020. You tweeted, yes, the North, yes, all of us, yes, America, yes, our original collective sin and unpaid debt, yes, reparations, yes, on this day.
I don't believe that was a reference to fiscal reparations, sir.
What kind of reparations was it a reference to?
I think it was just a reference to the idea that we all owe much to the people who came before us.
Okay, really? Well, one more, because Brandon Gill's like, nice try.
That's a bizarre way to frame what you tweeted. Okay, how much reparations have you personally paid?
Sir, I don't believe that I've ever paid reparations.
Okay, just for everybody else.
I'm not asking anyone to pay
reparations.
Seems
to be what you're suggesting. Do you believe that looting is morally wrong?
I believe that looting is illegal, and I refer to it as counterproductive. I think it should be prosecuted.
Do you believe it's morally wrong, though?
Of course.
Okay, the word counterproductive is interesting here, and he kind of tries to focus in on, well, counterproductive to what? To the left's mission?
Of course. Then why did you refer to it as counterproductive? It's a very different way to describe it.
It is both morally wrong and counterproductive, as well as being
You tweeted,
illegal.
It's hard to be mad about protests in reference to the BLM protests, not prioritizing the private property of a system of oppression. You didn't condemn the looting. You said that it was counterproductive.
Yeah, she was caught in all kinds of things today. It was glorious. Pull the plug on this funding as soon as you can slip it in. Please do that. We're back tomorrow at 3.